You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Listeners, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and we're here today on Monday, May 9th, and we are going to be talking about a very interesting subject. I hopefully will be able to have one of our good writers, Eric Stryker, who's written a very interesting article on the subject of the pharmaceutical industry, because many of you who, of course, follow my work and the Traditionalist Worker Party know that one of the biggest issues that is facing our people is drug addiction, in especially rural white communities. And this is not an addiction to street drugs that are coming from south of the border or Latin America. Of course, everyone knows about the cocaine phenomenon through the 1980s and 70s. But we are facing a deeper problem, legal drugs, specifically drugs that are painkillers, especially OxyContin, that has a huge impact on our community, that have been prescribed like candy and are extremely addictive. These are drugs that used to be only given to cancer patients, but now they're being given to everyone. So that's the thing. It's a huge addiction that we're facing. So we're going to hopefully get Eric on the line right now. Let's see if we can get him on to join our call. I appreciate all the patience my live listeners give me. He's been having some tech problems this morning. It's one of these big issues that I really think is super important for us to be able to talk about, because drug addiction has impacted us in so many different ways. Hey, Eric, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, all right, now you're on. So we are here. This is Mr. Eric Stryker, many of whom you know, who has been there to be able to discuss a lot of issues, especially the interracial element within pornography and how it actually is a money loser, but the Jewish producers of the pornography industry still heavily promote it. And so why is that? The idea that, you know, that they truly are more interested in supporting their ideological persuasions instead of supporting their money. I mean, it's amazing that the Jews care about money against all outs, except for when it comes to attacking white interests, when it comes to attacking Christian civilization. They will do anything they can to absolutely destroy these things. And that's just one of the views to really understand who the Jews are as a people. And of course, who their Goyish collaborators are, that they care more about the ideology of promoting, you know, white genocide, white demographic displacement, and attacking Christian values than anything else. So let's see. Again, we've been having a few tech problems this morning. Eric, can you hear us? And we've got tech problems. All right, that's fine. So I want to really get into this issue of what we're facing and why is this. I mean, you have to understand that collaboration with the enemy is one of the number one things that they promote. The idea that, you know, with Gentile collaborators, that they want to be able to support this radical anti-white, anti-Christian agenda. And pornography, as it's known within the Orthodox Church, of course, is known as the devil's iconography, you know, where human sexuality, human values, human traditions are supposed to be God ordained. You know, sex is not a bad thing, for instance, when it's between a husband and a wife. And it leads to children. It leads to that connection between a husband and a wife. It's a beautiful thing. But when the Jews then take something that's beautiful that God has created, like, you know, human sexuality, they pervert it, they twist it, they bring it in to being something then through the pornography industry that is absolutely horrible. That actually destroys the connection between men and women. That introduces degenerate worldviews and you know, they call them fetishes or kinks. But they're far worse than that. I mean, things like bestiality, homosexuality, interracial things. I mean, all these things are promoted with a specific purpose to attack, especially young white men and women, to then normalize behaviors that our ancestors, even just a few years ago, would have considered completely, completely out of control, completely out of control. But, lo and behold, the Jews, still promote them. And why is that? Because they're using these as a weapon against our people, to be able to normalize these behaviors. Because that's what their main purpose is to try and normalize behaviors that are abnormal, that are truly outside of the realm of normal human interactions. And they want to be able to try and make that something that to the youth is just a thing that can just go ahead and normalize, these abnormal behaviors. And that's one of the big things that I want to be able to talk about with Eric, that we are going to be, we're getting him along. I apologize for all of the tech problems that we've been able to have this morning. But, we need to be able to identify the people that are behind that, that are behind this ideology, that are trying to promote this to our people, really pushing this in a lot of different ways. So what we're going to do is try and get him on the line, and I really do apologize, guys. This is one of the joys of a live show that you get to deal with. So that's why we do it live, because when it's live, it's more fun, you know? and we are... Let's see if we can get Eric on the line. Patience is a virtue. That's something that we deal with on a regular basis. But to be able, as I've said, to be able to really figure this out. Eric, are you there?
Hello.
All right. Can you hear us now?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yep.
All right. So let's jump right into it. Our dear listeners have been extremely patient as we've been dealing with tech issues this morning left and right. But let's jump into it. Tell us a little bit about the article you're writing for the first edition of Action about the pharmaceutical industry. Give us the background and tell us about what you've been able to find in your research about the impact of OxyContin and other drugs on our communities.
Well, it's actually been in the news again, which is a total coincidence, because I started writing this article about 2 weeks ago. And a recent statistic came out that 190,000 people since 1999 have died from overdoses related to OxyContin primarily. And then you have Percocets and stuff like that. I mean, you also have Prince. He died from an opiate overdose, and now it's all in the news and stuff. And there's a lot of interest in this. Now, what I do in the article is I sort of make a parallel to the case of the Jewish Sassoon family in China during the 19th century, where there were a bunch of wars over opium. And I go over how these Jews would get the Asians over there addicted in the port cities because they wanted access to their tea. And because the Qing dynasty at the time wasn't willing to trade their tea for Jewish rags, I mean, they're literally trying to trade rags for their tea, and they wanted gold. So what they did basically was that when the front door wouldn't open, they sort of broke in through the back window and got them all addicted to opium. And then from there, the Chinese basically became their slaves. And so I make this parallel because there's a new Sassoon family, it's the Sacklers, who own the Purdue Pharma Company. And by and large, these Jews have made about $35 billion in 10 years just from OxyContin. And the effects of it across largely rural and white working class areas has been astonishing. It's terrible. It's completely destroyed entire communities, even medium-sized cities. Many young people have been lost. And, it's really concerning. It's really concerning because when you look at what when the media covers this issue, they never actually name the vampires that are doing the blood sucking, So it's basically a profile of this family by and large, and how they really embody Talmudic thinking in the sense that they really just don't consider Gentiles human, you know.
Well, and you know, when our party does activism in towns, especially in East Kentucky and West Virginia, I mean, I saw it. I was in Boonville, Kentucky. There's a lot of Boonvilles in Appalachia, but I was in Boonville, Kentucky, not too long ago, and going through the town, and we're talking about a town here of, 1,000 people, maybe. But there were like three open and functioning pharmacies. You know, you gotta wonder, they can't keep, that many fast food restaurants open. They can't keep that many gas stations open. But by golly, can they keep these pharmacies open? And, you know, the way it seems to me, you know, when everyone hears drug addiction, these are not drugs that people take, at least in the beginning, to get high. These are drugs, I mean, especially we're talking about the type of work out there, coal miners, factory workers, farmers, things like that, where you can get severely injured. And of course, due to low wages, the fact we don't have labor organizing or anything of the sort, we don't have any sort of ability to actually care for people when they get injured so they can heal up properly and get back in the job. If you're a working class white person, you've got to work and work and work until the day you die. And that's just the way the economy is set up now to exploit us. So we're talking about, you know, a coal miner here who might, you know, break a bone, who might severely pull a muscle or something like that. And for the sake of his family, does not have the ability to not go to work. He's got to go to work the next day. So the doctor will prescribe him a pill like Oxycontin, which then will end up, he gets that and then his prescription runs out. And he's still in pain. He didn't go to rehab because there's no proper rehab facilities. There isn't time for rehab. Then, the only way you can keep working is to continue these pills. And that's where we see the transfer of people from Oxy into heroin, because in many cases, then, you know, once you run out of Oxy scripts, then you end up looking towards something else, as an opiate, and then you end up finding heroin. And that's why we actually have an AIDS epidemic in southern Indiana, for instance, in parts of Kentucky, not because of homosexuality, not because of interracial relationships or things like that, but because of dirty needles, because of heroin, because the people that have been hooked on these drugs, just to be able to continue working, need to be able to, keep getting a fix. And these drugs, can you go in a little bit? I brought it up as we were getting you on the line, but can you talk a little bit about the history of Oxycontin and drugs like this and how they normally were not prescribed for sprains or injuries like that? They were given to cancer patients, right?
Yeah, well, basically what you said was very true. That's a big part of it. But another part of it is the Jewish work in creating phony pathologies. The problem with drugs in the sense of patent medicine, in the 19th century, well into, about World War II, patent medicine in the United States and the West in general was concerned mostly with treating the root of a problem rather than its symptoms. You know, medicine was actually useful. So this is the point of the article, actually, because this family of Jews, the Sacklers, they actually begun their careers in advertising, not in medicine. One of them worked, Arthur Sackler was worked at a psychiatry facility. And the way they did it was that around the 1950s, they started combining their clout in the medical community with their ability to advertise, like different skills they learned as advertisers. And before these Jews started doing this, there was actually no such thing in the prescription drug world, because it was kind of seen as unethical to have an advertisement for drugs, because they thought that if someone needs some kind of treatment, advertising isn't going to make a difference. So the way they responded to this was basically by creating a bunch of bogus scientific journals where they started inventing brand new pathologies. These scientific journals were posited as a sort of kind of like a sort of professional or clinical trial, like a regular scientific journal, but in reality, it was just an elaborate advertisement. And so it all began with Valium. And, these Jews, before Oxycontin, they got the patent to Valium, which was made by LaRoche. And before they used their new advertising method, Valium was largely used to treat epilepsy and people with serious illnesses. So what they did was that they created these phony journals and they dispatched a bunch of salesmen to doctors to talk to them personally. You know, they had free samples, glossy magazines to give them and stuff. And basically what they did was they changed the course of treatment that required Valium from things like epilepsy to new diseases that they made from scratch, like social anxiety, or, they claimed that it would treat stress. And so Valium went from the, benzos in general, they went from a serious drug that doctors treated with respect to what they later called mommy's little helper. All of these housewives who were, they were hysterical or they were stressed out by their family life or whatever, they would go to the doctor and the doctor would immediately prescribe Valium. This was in the 1960s. The Sackler Jews made $100 million. It was the first drug of its kind to pass that threshold in the 1960s. By the 1970s, there were the parallel street trade people that started off these idyllic little housewives that started off taking Valium. They were getting divorces and started prostituting themselves and living a life on the street. I mean, it was just ruined. Thousands of families, people overdosed. I mean, most people are familiar with the adverse effects of Valium. Now, what is most interesting about the case of Valium is that prior to it becoming mommy's little helper, it was the medical community and doctors in general understood Valium to be a very potent and dangerous drug. So these Jews spent millions and millions of dollars trying to obfuscate the fact that it was dangerous and potent in order to get people addicted to it for no reason either, because they didn't have anything. Women, life has its ups and downs and people get stressed and depressed and then they bounce back. This is organic part of life. But these Jews, they sold a pill. And so from the money they made with Valium, they, in the 90s, they went on to OxyContin. Now, OxyContin was synthesized in the early 20th century by German scientists, and it was actually scrapped and limited in its use because it was so similar to heroin. And because of the Harrison Narcotics Act in the United States at the time, it became very difficult to get this imported into the United States and other parts of Europe and stuff. The use of oxycodone, which is the scientific name of OxyContin, was quite limited. It was for people with terminal cancer, people that had really serious surgeries. Doctors were fully aware that this drug was very close to heroin and very addictive. So in the 90s, the Sackler Jews got the patent for oxycodone, and they actually added a so-called time release in order to get it through the FDA. And this is all, I mean, I go into this in the article. It's all, it was all an elaborate scam that they knew was bullshit, and that they would actually, they knew people would get really addicted to it, but it was like sort of like a technicality that they exploited to get it through. So in the late 90s, they got OxyContin in the mainstream medical world, and then they started creating the Sackler's lobbies, or funding lobbies. They were called pain advocates, and these Jews would actually go around making lists of doctors that they would encounter that were kind of ambivalent or skeptical about giving their patients synthetic heroin for little sprains and stuff like that. So they would actually make lists of these doctors and then create boycott campaigns claiming that these doctors, particularly in rural areas, were not adequately treating pain. And, they create all these bogus journals claiming that pain was being adequately treated in the United States and stuff. And so about 15 years later, we're at where we're at.
Right.
You know, you got millions of people addicted. Yeah.
And the thing, I mean, as you point out, I mean, with Valium, you know, I actually know some people that have, you know, who are comrades who are in the process of trying to get off it because they, were prescribed it due to things in everyday life or, you know, anxiety is a problem and things like that. And we're told there's a solution. And to me, what I see within the modern world is everything within the modern world is inorganic. You know, the family is under attack. And historically, Europeans didn't have the nuclear family. We had an extended family where grandparents and uncles and aunts would all be in a close area, be connected to one another to be able to help one another. So, you know, the idea of in the 50s, the idea of a housewife taking care of all of her kids 365 days a year is not the way historically European civilization worked. You know, when the mom needed a break, which, you know, I can testify from my wife, sometimes she needs a break. That's why there's a grandmother. That's why there's aunts and things like that to be able to help out.
That's another thing I mentioned in the article. That's the tension between Aryan and Jew. The Aryan ethic in medicine is a Hippocratic oath. Doctors literally since classical Greek times have vowed not to poison their patients, to treat them to the utmost extent and never to get them to abuse them for profit. And Jews don't have this philosophy. For non-Jews, it doesn't matter. No.
The only way that they can justify the current system we live in, I mean, that's what I'm saying, within the modern world, that you basically need a prescription to be able to survive in this modern world. And something that a lot of comrades I know who live in major cities have seen within their own lives. Now they've kind of awakened to it, to how sadistic it is. But to live in the modern world where you're not connected with your family, you're not connected with nature, you're not connected with your local community, you're isolated, you know, you're living in a crummy apartment, you know, your family, everyone is working, you know, mom, dad, brothers, sisters, just to be able to keep a roof over your heads. And there's no connection to tradition. There's no, you know, connection to any form of religion. There's no connection to one another. That the only way you can really survive in the modern West, if you're going to play the game as the Jewish run system puts it, is if you're basically not here. Basically, if you're mentally checked out, and that's what these drugs are. It seems when they're sent to majority white communities is to try and, you know, continue to break us apart, but basically pacify us in a way that we don't realize.
Absolutely. The pacification thing is absolutely true, because when you look at the statistics, I mean, there's obviously a racial motive here, because doctors in black and other, you know, non-white communities, they don't prescribe oxycodone to the same extent that the ones in white communities do. So,
especially,
and that doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, with rural white communities being the most traditional, being the most conservative, being the most usually aware of racial issues. I was actually just talking to a guy in Louisville, you know, about the issue of them tearing down the Confederate monument there. And, you know, he was talking about how someone should climb to the top of the monument and put up a rebel flag, and all the people around agreed, you know, that sort of thing. Like, rural whites are the ones who are most aware of our politics. And that seems why that there's this intense campaign to pacify and addict us, because if an entire generation, especially of young men, but also of young women, are junkies, are addicted to pills, you know, and then get addicted to heroin and they're spending all their time trying to get a fix instead of actually fighting back for their communities.
Well, the New York Times actually wrote that the Sackler Jews targeted poor white communities because they have a high rate of Medicaid enlistment. But that doesn't make any sense, because so do black people, so do Mexicans, so all these other groups. And, you know, the doctors in their communities don't prescribe opiates for any reason to them. So it's obvious that the Purdue Pharma philosophy was to specifically target rural and small town doctors. There's no question about that. I mean, you know, Purdue Pharma had to pay $635 million in fines in a Kentucky case where they were found to be, you know, and all three of the people that were found guilty in the case were Jews, by the way. They were found guilty for conspiring to lie about the addictive potential of their drug, knowing full well it would get people addicted to it and that it would rake in the money. But, you know, that $635 million they paid back to the government is nothing compared to the $35 billion they've made over time. You know, this family,
It's just like Wall Street bankers who will pay a fine for securities trading problems or insider trading or things like that.
The cost of business. Yeah. Well, it's just the cost of business for them.
It's peanuts. And that's where our system, you know, where regulations, and this is why a strong national state that believes in the national community is so important. Because the government's job, you know, historically has always been to be the protector and the advocates of the people, to ensure that there was a healthy population that was protected from enemies outside the nation, but also insidious things within the nation. And our government has totally flipped itself on the head. And whether it's the refugee policies, whether it's now, whether it's bankers, or now whether it's even drug policies, they're dedicated to the destruction of their constituents. And that's the opposite of what a government is. And that's, you know, when people talk to me about our government, that's why our government is not the voice of the people. It's the protector of the internationalists and the globalists and Jewish interests that want to be able to destroy us on literally every single front.
Well, they say the protocols of Zion aren't real, but, you know, I'm not going to give an opinion on whether they're authentic or not. But in 1903, which is where they're purportedly released, it says in the protocols that they were going to develop amusement, spectator sports, and drugs to pacify the goyim. And it's kind of interesting that 100 years later, that's exactly what you see them doing, you know, because Jews being attracted to this kind of trade, I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of money they paid to bribe and lie and deceive and work and the angles they played just to get OxyContin through the FDA. And then after that, following that, they got pressured all of these overwhelmed, rural, and simple doctors to start over-prescribing it because you're not adequately treating pain. And so, you know, you got this complete mess, and there's no one doing anything about it. You know, there's nothing happening. And the three Jews that were convicted of purposely poisoning an entire nation, none of them saw a single day in jail. Okay, if you have OxyContin in your pocket illegally, you get 2 years in jail in Broward County, Florida. But if you actually manufacture, sell it, and knowingly poison people with it, you don't see a single day in jail. I mean, that really tells you why this whole system is completely illegitimate.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing we see where there's a double tier system. You know, whether it comes to we see with the bus with everything from child molestation, child pornography, where Jews get, it seems to be, special treatment. Or, you know, if I rob a liquor store and steal $200, I can, you know, I can do 10 years in prison. But if I steal hundreds of billions of dollars from the American people, then I get a fine and I still get to retire, or I get to go to, you know, a Club Med style prison. It's an absolute double tier system, and it shows that the system hates us. And, I wish we had more time because this is such a subject. I'd like to be able to talk about this in depth. Hopefully the tech gremlins won't cause any more problems.
Yeah.
As we close out today, where can folks see more of your work?
You can go to thesocialnationalist.wordpress.com. That's thesocialnationalist.wordpress.com. It's a little side gig I've got. And I'm also editing the Traditional Worker Party newspaper. That should be out in about a week or so. We're going to put that to print. You can go and get it. Where can you get it, Matt?
Well, to sign up to be a party comrade, we're also working on a subscription for just people that want to subscribe to, you know, our party paper, which is titled Action. We're working on a subscription thing, but right now it's just for party comrades, but we'll be expanding it because we've got so many articles, so much content. We're going to be coming out with, a paper that's going to be quarterly, and as subscriptions go up, we're going to move it to monthly and then biweekly. So I'm really excited about that. And Eric, thank you again so much for joining us and all the work you do for the party. And for you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not a comrade yet, join us at treadworker.org. Get in, see the paper. I've seen Eric's article. It's going to be absolutely amazing. We got so many other great writers coming together. And this is a topic we need to talk about because even when the mainstream media talks about it, they're not telling us the truth on these subjects. We need to call out the people that are poisoning our folk. We need to call out the people that are poisoning them in mind, body, and spirit, and we need to fight for them. So, Eric, thank you so much for joining us, and comrades, I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, and I'll look forward to another exciting week of the Daily Traditionalist. So I'll talk to you tomorrow, and hail victory!
tuned in to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.